Place to be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I'm glad you're back with us. I am one of your co-hosts, Andrew Reich, and I am joined by my co-host, Adam Murray.
Ah, season's greetings.
Season's greetings. So, I heard there's a movie coming out this week.
Point Break, the remake?
Well, you know what? Point Break wasn't really that good the first time. I'll be that guy and say that.
Well, the fact they're remaking it was a travesty anyway.
It's amazing to me that Kathryn Bigelow, who did two great movies, Hurt Locker and Zero Dark Thirty, I can't believe she's made the same movie. That one in Near Dark, which is like I don't know if you ever saw that. That was Bill Paxton with that live-action vampire movie from like the late 80s.
Yeah.
But she was James Cameron's ex-wife, so she was, she was doing a lot of the action genre stuff too. And one of those movies she did was Point Break. You know, with Patrick Swayze, but yeah, I just saw a commercial of that one. Not impressed. But no, we're sort of kind of playing on there with that Star Wars: The Force Awakens is going to be coming out this week. Any kind of rekindling of memories? Were you a Star Wars fan growing up?
No, I'll be happy. Next week when all the hype is over, everyone will say it sucked or it was good or whatever, and. You know, there's one thing with having the hype, but, you know, for people to be camping out 2 weeks in advance and that one kid...
You cannot get a ticket on Fandango for the first 4 days.
The tickets went on sale in October, and, mm-hmm. But the one kid who paid $21,000 to rent out the entire theater for himself...
That's not even nice.
He bought every ticket. It's just like, look, I'm glad that's the worst thing that's going on in your life, because apparently everything in the world is fine. But, it's all the tie-ins I'm sick of.
Oh, God, I just saw one on my Kindle interface for CoverGirl.
There's CoverGirl. There's,
I went to Pottery Barn. There were Star Wars, little knickknacks everywhere just for, sheets and quilts.
You know, it's the official coffee maid is the official coffee creamer of Star Wars. Dodge is in there. I'm like, nobody's buying either of those because of Star Wars.
Well, Disney's involved now that they have that association with Lucasfilm, so
they've
rolled out the red carpet for Star
beyond
Wars.
Beyond whoring it out, and it's just there's way too much oversaturation of the market.
Which one is your favorite? And the prequels don't count.
I have never seen one to three. I don't think I've seen 4 through 6 in the 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
I just never got into them. And
so you've never seen Star Wars?
I saw them. I remember when they re-released them in the mid-90s. I saw one of them in the theaters again, and I've obviously seen them on TV.
Yeah.
But I haven't seen them in at least 15 years.
I was a huge Star Wars fan as a kid. The prequels, I was not high on. I don't even know if I can't even remember watching Attack of the Clones. If I did, I blocked it out of my mind. That was episode 2. My personal favorite is still The Empire Strikes Back, which is episode 5, chronology-wise. But you make a really good point, and that point is, what if it's bad?
Like, remember all the hype for one? Oh my God, it's coming back. Let's wait out 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's wait out 3 weeks in a row, and then... What is this crap? What is this Jar Jar? Everyone was ripping it. Oh, well, I still saw it 10 times.
So you're saying we're getting ourselves ready all for like the last 2 or 3 years for possibly a mediocre movie?
You people have hyped it up as if it's going to be the greatest film of all time.
I wasn't one of those. Now, I do like J.J. Abrams. I don't think is a bad movie director.
If you're one of those people who were posting Facebook posts about here's the trailer and oh my God, it was. Mm-hmm. New footage, you're part of those people in my book. There's no movie that should be...
I'm half guilty of that,
You've set the expectations so high, mm-hmm. just go in and enjoy it as it is, and my guess is it's just going to look like the other Star Trek movies with different characters, because,
Yeah, and then we got March coming up with Batman, Superman, Dawn of Justice. I just saw a new trailer of that, and oh my God, I'm not looking forward to it. I was slowly turning after watching the first trailer from Comic-Con, and now I'm just totally turned heel, safe to say, on Batman, Superman, Dawn of Justice. Does not look good at all.
Yeah, but you'll still see it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all. Oh, well, I'm still seeing it opening weekend. So it's just like, go in, enjoy it. don't read too much into it, because the more you raise expectations, like every WrestleMania, oh, this will be the best one ever. How was it? It really sucked. It wasn't, you know,
yeah,
as good as WrestleMania 10 or whatever the best one is.
We're getting close to the road to WrestleMania. Now, they still got this really, you know, semi-crappy one that they have coming up, TLC, which will already have passed by this point. So, you know, everyone's going to get the crap out of their system by the new year, and then we get on to the Royal Rumble. And then
here's a random wrestling question for you.
Okay.
Before we get into our actual topic.
Yeah, our actual topics, yeah.
Have they killed ladders and chairs by just... It's all, like, every few months there's a new TLC, and hasn't the gimmick sort of lost its appeal?
If you had asked me that, like, 10 years ago, I would agree. But now it's, like, it's so saturated that it's not even a point. You know, like, ladders and chairs and tables, it's to a point with those gimmicks where they've done them so many times that the creativity has sort of, even if there's something creative that does happen, it's lost upon you because you've seen it so in so many different variations that, like last year they called it tables, ladders, chairs, and stairs. One of their matches was a stairs match. We had a match where it was all surrounded by the ring steps. You know?
Yeah, isn't it just better just to not do it, you know, just retire it for
a
little bit?
It's the idea of a more dangerous gimmick with weaponry that raises the stakes and it intensifies the matches and the rivalry that's involved in the matches. So it's just kind of more of one of those gradual step-up type of things. That's why they use Hell in a Cell so often as like a blow-off to a feud. You know, because it's like, this is the end, and this is how, you know, this is the most barbaric match you could put them in. But now it's to a point where gimmick matches are used not just for blow-offs, but for, like, just for anything. They're no longer gimmicks.
It's just, here's person A versus person B. There's no feud. Well, let's just give them ladders and chairs for why not?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, that's just me.
But speaking of gimmicks and raising your stakes so that you can have high expectations and have them be lowered, that's going to be the subject of our NBA team podcast this week. Not to be too much of a Debbie Downer this week, but, I mean, we're going to try to keep it fresh, try to split it apart so that we don't trash too many teams. We're going to leave it strictly to teams instead of players. We'll probably save the players for another day because there's so many players that we could just tee off on. But this title, this episode with the, you know, with all the Star Wars, you know, bugaboo is going to be The Fail Awakens. Adam, when does it get to a point when you realize with an NBA team, an NBA player even, or maybe just a trend, where things are just not going right, where you can't just say, "Oh, it's the start of the season. They're gonna shake off the rust. They're gonna get back to where they're supposed to be." And then you start watching it, and the trend starts to set, and you realize, "Oh, this is not going well."
It happens when it's already too late, and then, well, oh, it was the coach's fault. If we had a new coach, it'd be better. Oh, well, the GM's gone. Trends you don't notice until you admit it. It's always, oh, we could turn around, with the exception of one team. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, as of now, the Sacramento Kings, who by all rights are pretty bad.
Yeah, they're a spectacular failure. Like, they're one of those ones where they're kind of entertaining.
They're only two games out of the playoffs right now.
Exactly.
And Milwaukee, major disappointment. Only a good four games. You know, the top 10 teams are only three and a half games apart.
Mm-hmm.
So the trends are always, oh, if they go on a 6-game winning streak, they're back in the thick of things.
We can right the ship. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
you just get hot, like at the casino, you get hot one time, you have a good 30-minute run, okay, you're raking in the dough. But it's we've already gone to the end of the first quarter. We've already a quarter into the season. We already seem to, you could tell, but you just don't want to admit it.
Yeah, but you don't want to be down 20 in the first quarter, like a couple of teams that we're going to be talking about. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to really dig yourself a hole, you know. You know what? I'm not even going to make a category of this one. I'm just going to throw it out there for you because of I've heard this a couple of times already, with the fact that the Eastern Conference has more winning teams or teams at 500 than the Western Conference. Has the Western Conference as a whole been a failure?
It's cyclical. It's not a failure, it's just the ebb and flow of everything. With the West is super good, when we just have the best 16 teams from all conferences.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's have the best 16 teams. Let's say there's a strike right now. 10th place Orlando Magic are over 500. Seventh place Rockets are just at 500, so they wouldn't make the playoffs.
And the
Wizards
are under 500, and even though Bradley Beal's got the stress reaction, he's going to be out for a couple of weeks with a tibia issue. They won't. I don't think they'll be a losing team either.
And that's the thing, is just you have teams that get better, teams that get worse, and drafting players get older. The Western, you know, a few years ago, Western Conference is in a prime. Now you see these Memphis Grizzlies are a little older, the Clippers looking definitely older, and then all these young teams are now getting their prime. It just happens. Remember back in the 90s when the Eastern Conference was the super dominant thing?
Yes.
It just returns.
But do you think that'll be the reason why we see a lot of the Western Conference teams as mentions for some of these categories when we talk about teams that have failed at certain departments? That the Western Conference teams have, because of the stakes that they raised, because of the Warriors and how good they were and how many teams had 50 to 57 wins or more at the end of the season last year, that their expectations have built so high that you're bound to get a lot of teams that are going to let you down. Whereas in the East, their expectations weren't as high because they hadn't performed well over the last few seasons, and now they're picking up steam, and people sort of have more of a rosy outlook for the Eastern Conference.
Well, that's your point right there. Let's take a look at Houston. They had your Star Wars expectation. You had them as your top two teams.
I thought they were going to be really good.
They were going to be the new champions. They had their chip on their shoulder. They were going to do it, and then they fall flat on their face. Whereas you have a team who's had lowered expectations coming in, sort of like Toronto. Oh, they blew the team. They're going to be in the lottery. They're done. And they're sitting there in second place already.
Yeah, and Toronto's expectations are weird because I think in the city they have pretty big expectations because that's really the only game in town for basketball, not necessarily for, you know.
They've pretty much written off the Maple Leafs every year.
Well, yeah, but hockey's still in Canada, so we can't dispute that. But when it comes to basketball, Toronto is everything. Even for just the all of Canada, you know, Toronto is the thing. So when they have a little bit of expectations there, but they've kind of gotten to a point where they've met the expectations, but in the playoffs it's a different story, you know. But we're not talking about the playoffs, we're talking about the regular season, because like you just said, we're a quarter of a way through it, and we still got a long ways to go, but we got a good sampling to the point where we can really judge these teams and say, man, you need to pick up steam, or you're losing, the train is falling off tracks as we speak.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start with, because you were talking about the Rockets, and we had one category called Epic Fail, a team that had pretty large expectations based on the momentum that they were carrying from last season or how well they did last season. A lot of people would consider them like on the cusp of being a title contender or being a title contender and just not measuring up. For you would say the Rockets for yourself?
Yeah.
Can you want to expand a little higher for that one?
Well, they just failed. They're not, you know, they fired Kevin McHale because apparently he was the problem, but they haven't gotten any better. The players quit on him. Ty Lawson was supposed to be the X factor. The only real good point in Houston right now is Clint Capella. Mm-hmm. This was supposed to be Terrence Jones's year to explode, and, you know, he's the number one most coveted free agent, and all teams because he has the potential and power, and the only one who's done anything is Clint Capella.
Yeah.
James Harden has sort of disappeared into his own Harden world, and...
Yeah, and the thing is, too, under J.B. Bickerstaff, the style hasn't changed. Like, it's the same tempo. I don't really see anything different out of them. Where, you know, it kind of reminds me of the Timberwolves when they fired Flip Saunders in 2004, 2005, where they had pretty big expectations, and then, you know, Sam Cassell sort of fell apart, Latrell Sprewell fell apart, and then they started losing games, and Kevin Garnett got miserable, and then they fired Flip. And they brought in, you know, they had an interim coach, but the style never changed, and they just kept losing games, and they thought that firing Flip was going to be the answer because the players weren't, you know, had given up on him, and it turned out not to be the case. You know, it turned out to be that the players just weren't good enough to vie for a championship, and the expectations were too high. I'm wondering with the Rockets if that's the case, if they weren't as good as we thought they would be, and they just rode a lot of momentum last season.
Well, as we had mentioned in previous episodes, losing Josh Smith really sort of did hurt them a lot. Mm-hmm. But there's no reason the team should be as bad as they are right now. And
well, they're still in the playoffs per se. You know, if you look at them, they're like the seventh seed, and they're at 12-12 at 500. So they still got a little bit of time. But when you're when you're in a conference where, you know, the Thunder are clicking again now that Durant's back from his hamstring injury, the Spurs are 20-5, the Golden State Warriors, who finally had their winning streak snapped at 24-1, I mean, you're not catching those guys, you know. And you know the Clippers are going to bounce back eventually. It's going to be really hard for them to get home court. So whatever they do in the playoffs, they're going to have to overperform.
Well, that's basically what it comes down to, is the best you could hope for is to get the 4 seed, mm-hmm. or be the 5 and play at the Clippers, because you don't want to go to Oklahoma City or San Antonio or Golden State. Those aren't easy matches, especially if you're the road team. So the fact that they're slow and still slowing and their stats haven't been impressive at all.
Yeah, and I think Ariza had a little bit of an injury there too, so they got a little bit knocked up by some injuries. So we'll see how it goes there with the Rockets. Mine is not a title contender per se, but I got to go with the New Orleans Pelicans as my epic fail. Alvin Gentry came in with a lot of expectations because his style was so different from what Monty Williams was doing, which was mostly slow ball and trying to focus on defense and execution. Whereas with Gentry, it was all about the three ball off, speeding things up, and the Pelicans just got off to a really rotten start. They sit now at 6-17. The only team that has a worse record than them in the Western Conference is the Los Angeles Lakers.
Well, that I'd say is more on the GM, because this is the same team they've had year in and year out, and just every year they get injured, and they never have cap room or money to add other people.
And they had the cap room this summer, and they used it to re-sign players.
Yeah, and just keep the team intact, and that's the problem, is you trade away your draft picks every year, and you can't get better if you don't have a bench, and their bench every year was, let's sign Jimmer Fredette, okay, let's cut him again.
We'll see there when Eric Gordon's contract comes up. You know, I got a feeling he'll be the victim of a trade. And then Drew Holiday and Tyreke Evans, they're going to be on expirings next season. I know Drew Holiday still has some talent. Tyreke Evans has been more valuable for that team than I thought he would be. But for Drew, I just think it's over. Like, I don't think, despite what he can provide when he's healthy, he never is healthy. So I think we're at a point where giving up on him is not the worst idea, but it's a matter of moving him.
So would you move Ryan Anderson in order to get rid of an Eric Gordon? And
you know, I've been hearing that name a lot. In fact, there was a rumor that popped up that Rhino was in talks with a deal where he would go to the Suns in exchange for Markieff Morris, who, if you notice, with the Phoenix Suns, has been incredibly unhappy. Did you see that thing where he deliberately tried to switch lanes on during a free throw and got a technical foul in a pivotal moment where there was like a 1-point game or a 3-point game?
Yeah, and that's also worrisome signs that, you know, there's a difference between being unhappy and just
being an asshole,
pouting your way out of, you know, he'll pout his way out of the league.
And so it looks like Markieff is soon to be out in Phoenix. But at 8 rebounds a game, he's valuable. So we'll see if that they can make that happen. But, I don't think any trade can really help this out with Anthony Davis and the gang. I think
this year is dumb, I'm saying, to sort of hit the restart button and...
Yeah, but would it be a restart? Like, I don't feel like getting Alvin Gentry was the restart. I feel like whatever they do next summer, especially if they can move Holiday or Tyreke Evans, I think that's the restart. I think that's where you really start to get serious and say, okay.
Yeah, but if you get rid of Anderson to get rid of one of these parts, and then you'll have the cap room from Eric Gordon's money, and
then you can bring somebody along and say, hey, you want to play with Anthony Davis for 5 years?
Yeah,
so, yeah. So yeah, Dell Demps, the GM you were talking about, I agree, hasn't really done the greatest job. He's got some room to maneuver so that he could try to make a big move, but time is ticking. I don't think he's got all the time in the world there. So even though Gentry was his hire, I don't think it's a guarantee that just because Gentry's there, even if they kind of become more successful and try to climb out of that hole and try to get near 500, I don't think Del Demps' job is in any kind of safety. You know, so we'll see there. Let's move to a one that's a little bit more positive, as if we could say, and we're going to call it failing upwards. Teams that are losing, you know, predictably losing, mind you, but on the you know, on the process of losing, and here's the word process, but this is in a good way, are getting better, and you can tell, you can see the signs of improvement going forward. You can see long-term goals being being achieved. So what do you see there as failing your team that's failing upwards?
This is a tough one because we can't mention the same three teams we mention every other year.
Uh-huh.
In you know, Utah and Orlando and Minnesota because they're there on their process.
Mm-hmm.
But this year alone, I would have to give Portland, with the C.J. McCollum, you know,
Damian Lillard backcourt.
Yeah, that is one, and Denver didn't fall apart like we all expected him to. We knew Moutier would have his expected troubles, but Gallinari has been nothing short of excellent on that team right now.
Yeah, and I mean, Denver, I'm glad you mentioned Denver, because we don't really talk about them too much. They're sort of in the shadows a little bit, because they're not going to be a playoff team this year, predictably. But, you know, Moutier, you know, like you already said, he struggled, but he's a good rookie. He's definitely their point guard of the future. They've handed him the ball and they've said, go ahead and run the show, and we'll see how it goes. But Gallinari has been picking up nicely. The other one that has been playing well is Fareed. When he's ready, when he's there and ready to play, Fareed has played pretty well. And when it comes to the Denver Nuggets, it's hard to say because Mike Malone's the coach there, and Mike Malone is definitely a better coach than Brian Shaw. We can't argue that.
I wouldn't say he's a better coach. He just seems to go with the flow. I'm not saying, it doesn't seem like he knows really what he's doing. It's just everything seems to be working out as better than expected.
Yeah, and even with Nurkic being hurt, they brought in Nikola Jokic. And Jokic has played pretty decently for them in certain minutes. So good drafting by them as well.
Drafting in Jeffrey LeVern.
Mm-hmm. Jeffrey LeVern. Re-signing Will Barton was pretty neat. I liked Will Barton anyway, you know, when he was in Portland. So when they made that late trade for him late last season, and then they re-signed him, I said, well, we'll see what he can provide now that he's sort of found the team that really wants him. And Barton has played very, very well. And it's a team that's not going to be like a world beater. But they're gonna be in the mix every now and then, you know, in being competitive. But Portland has been more than competitive. Portland has actually played well in a lot of the games that they played.
They played well because of the backcourt, but a lot of their trades, like, well, you know, this is for a future episode with players who are failing, but there's a lot of front court and their bench that sort of is just sort of dead weight.
Like Myers Leonard.
He was supposed to improve. Noah Vonleh still hasn't shown up. Mo Harkless.
The one who's actually overachieved this year is Alan Crabb. Like, I knew he was decent at Cal Berkeley, but he's actually played very nicely as, like, the third guard. Or maybe a small forward, if you will.
And Ed Davis has sort of settled into his role of being just energy off the bench.
But really, that team is Lillard and McCollum, the mid-major stars, the ones that... We need a nickname for them, like, when it comes to them being kind of smaller, small-school type of guards. We need to find a really good nickname for McCollum and Lillard.
We have nothing but time on our hands, so... nothing but episodes to fill up, so...
You mentioned the predictable teams, the ones that everyone picks, but I'll be predictable, and I'll say the Minnesota Timberwolves, because the Timberwolves at 9-13 right now... They're not a playoff team, but you can tell that they're getting better. You can tell that they're learning how to win by losing, you know, trial and error. Karl-Anthony Towns has been terrific. He won Rookie of the Month in the month of November for the Western Conference. Zach LaVine has played well. Andrew Wiggins is Andrew Wiggins. He's close to a superstar. I wouldn't call him a superstar yet, but he's getting really close. And then they've got a lot of contracts that they can move around. Like, I think Pekovic is a guy that they'll be able to move in the at the trade deadline and find somebody that can really provide for them in the future.
Well, the thing is, people forget 2 years ago, they were only, like, 2-3 games out of the playoffs.
Yeah, but that was with Kevin Love. You know, Ricky...
That was with Kevin Love, but then last year, they just were so injured, you were picking up players who literally played, who lived in the town you were playing in.
Do you think Rubio is that much of a presence for them, that when he's healthy, that they're a semi-decent team, and when he's not, they're bad?
Well, he's healthy, yes, because he was like Rondo. You're not expecting him to shoot, but he's giving you, you know, he's creating shots. Mm-hmm. but by just getting these crazy passes in that you're not getting in from Zach LaVine, Levine, or the point guard du jour.
Let's do that as an off-topic. Give me a player who has played spectacularly, even though the team has failed.
Who's playing well, but the
a
team
a great is... season, a great performance in a failing season. I gotta throw one at you to keep you on your toes.
You're gonna probably say Porzingis. Rondo?
Yes, Rajon Rondo for the Sacramento Kings, leading the league in assists, doing crazy, crazy passes that probably don't even make sense, but he doesn't because he knows he can get away with it without turning the ball over. And even if he does, fuck it, I play for the Kings. So he's been pretty great. He's been pretty great in Sacramento. He's not been fundamentally sound, but you know he's done what he can, you know, as a point guard there. You know, and the Sacramento Kings are not garbage. They're not the Lakers. They're not terrible.
No, they're not. And that was they're right now. They sort of have some log jams created with their what do we do with McLemore and they're figuring out their rotation still. And you know, obviously the front office is a complete mess. But as for, you know, and it doesn't help when Cousins is out for any stretch of time. Because he's the only, you know, you're noticeably worse when he's not there, and Cauley Stein's out for a month with a broken finger, so.
Yeah. The only one I could think of, too, is Greg Monroe with the Bucks. Statistically, he's doing terrific. Now, they are the third worst team in the Eastern Conference right now at 10-15. But that doesn't mean they're out of the mix. They're only out of the playoffs by, like a few games. We do have to mention that they were the team. They were the one in 24-1 that actually beat the Golden State Warriors. You know what it is, Adam, though? There was something that felt kind of dirty about that loss. Follow me when I say this, is that you know how sometimes when these big losses happen, like when the 72 Lakers lost to the Bucks, it was a big nationally televised game where the Bucks were a really good team, the Lakers were a really good team, and it was a big clash between Wilt and Kareem. And then when the Heat lost to ESPN, it was at the United Center, it was on ESPN, and everybody was watching it, it was a big deal. This one kind of felt kind of like weird and innocuous. Where it was on a Saturday night, it was off of a back-to-back, no one was really expecting it, and the flow of the game was really choppy. You know, I'm not trying to take credit away from the Bucks. The Bucks played great that one night against a Warriors team that looked tired and dead after a really tough double overtime win against the Celtics in TD Garden, but it felt a little weird, didn't it?
Well, it's like, you know, it doesn't feel weird because there's so many channels, and NBA TV has to get their games, ESPN has to get their games, the local carriers have to get their games. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't predict this from, you know, weeks or, you know, back in September. Oh, they'll be good. It was just, here's another matchup. But it's like when
the Bulls would lose to the Raptors in 96 to 97. It was like, it shouldn't happen, but somehow it does, and nobody pays attention.
But it's like you're at the casino, you're pumping money in the slot machine, you're putting quarters in, nothing. All of a sudden, you're like, okay, I'm out of money, and then the old lady comes in, puts one coin in, and bam, she wins the jackpot. Yeah, after you're watching that double overtime game against Celtics, I was reading Twitter, I'm like, oh, they have nothing left. You could tell, you know, the Bucks have a good chance of winning, this is where it's going to end, because they just really gave everything in that Celtics game.
You know, go ahead.
It's sort of the letdown is they sort of did the mop-up duty to win, but that's why you play every game.
You know, we spend so much of these episodes as the regular season goes along saying, you know, to temper people's expectations and saying, you know, it's just regular season basketball. It's easy to be corrected. But you know, as a Celtics fan, were watching the Warriors game where they went to double overtime. You had to have some kind of emotional investment in that game, even though some people would say, well, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because it's just one win or one loss for the Celtics and, you know, in December when, you know, they're still 500 and the Warriors have a crazy good record and one loss isn't going to kill them. But didn't it feel like it mattered a little bit?
It was definitely a playoff atmosphere. And, you know, I was just watching at a bar and you see people like getting excited for it. And it's like, well, and I'm the asshole in the corner going, look, they're a young team, they're going to blow it. They're going to find a way. And then Sullinger does something stupid, followed by Sullinger doing something stupid, followed by Isaiah Thomas playing hero ball.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, if you remember anything from the Dallas game where they just gave that one away, that's what happens between young teams who don't know how to win and then championship veteran teams. So, yeah, you could say it's a little cheesy that Milwaukee did it, but...
And they almost beat them, but they didn't have Klay Thompson or Harrison Barnes. I have to say that as an asterisk.
That doesn't matter. Other teams, Celtics had to play back and back, and they looked to be... I didn't see the game, but
Marcus Smart and...
You know, they seem to have beaten Charlotte, who was a top three team in the East, and looked kind of easy. Mm-hmm. So, take it for what it's worth. It's not like every other team had a rest, and Golden State was the only one with a back-to-back.
Yeah, I don't think Jason Kidd had a great master plan when the Bucks beat the Warriors. I think the Warriors just played their D game, and the Bucks played their A or B game. Whereas I felt like Brad Stevens is a mastermind. Like, I thought he really set up his players nicely to take that game away from them.
Well, and there's your, failure to fail.
Uh-huh.
If Celtics were on the tanking plan, okay, let's get draft picks, and all of a sudden, we're overachieving. We're making Evan Turner look good, and we got Jordan Crawford to play, and we trade him for a first-round pick, And now they're even better, and the expectations are even higher, and they're still a 500 team, but you look at that roster, it's like, well, how are they winning anything? How do they beat San Antonio? How do they push Golden State to double overtime when nobody else could do it yet?
Yeah. I've got my pick, but I want to have this move forward to the next topic by just giving you a bit of a question. I'll answer your question with a question, and that's that. What's the difference between being a failure at failing, like not doing a good job, like doing too good of a job at getting, semi-good players and looking like you're tanking and then doing well, and then setting yourself up for failure by boosting your expectations by doing well? Where's the difference?
To me, that your sentence is very convoluted and confusing.
It is.
But that just sounds like the definition of the Phoenix Suns.
Uh-huh.
Like, we're going to fail? No, let's trade for the exact same player. Okay, now we're going to do good. Nope, let's blow it up. And it's just the dog chasing its tail, and, well, we know we're not good enough to beat the good teams, and we know we're too good to beat the bad teams, so...
Yeah, to clean it up for you, because it was convoluted and confusing, is where is it at a point where it seems like you're doing badly, but you do good, you somehow do well, and then people expect you to do well?
That was, again, Phoenix 2 years ago, and then now they have the high expectations.
Then they made the move. I think that's the difference, when you make the big move. Now, the Celtics getting Amir Johnson and David Lee were not the big moves, okay? And Phoenix struck out trying to get LeBron James and big superstars in the summer of 2014, and then they tried to make big moves of their own by trading away Isaiah Thomas and I'm totally missing out on the other one that they had that they traded away. Who was that?
Dragic,
and then now you have to do well because
let's just take a look back at what was the big move. Let's look at Golden State and how they became who they are. Mm-hmm. Their first big move was overpaying for David Lee to get him from the Knicks.
Yeah, but this is way back. This is like when Don Nelson was still there.
Yeah, this was 5 years ago. Then Iguodala, traded.
No, you missed one. They tanked so that they could keep their pick, and they drafted Harrison Barnes.
Who isn't that good. I'm still off on him.
Well, it is interesting. What does it mean that they continued the winning streak for a good 12 or 10 games without him?
It means he's not an essential piece, nor was he ever.
I can't believe you're down in the Falcon.
If he's, this is the thing is, if you're going to, the best thing you could be is the fourth best option, how essential are you?
Mm-hmm.
The
one thing, though, is that Brandon Rush, and you watched him a little bit in those games, he didn't light the world on fire. Whereas if Harrison Barnes were there, maybe you'll see a little bit of a difference.
You'd see a little, maybe a mismatch here or there, but for the most part, you wouldn't.
He's a guy that passes the eye test. You watch him play, and you're like, man, he's pretty good. And then in key games, he sort of disappears, and you're like, who is Harrison Barnes again? You know.
Well, that's the thing, is you're waiting for him, yeah. And it's like, well, okay, you've been in the league 4 years. What have you done?
Yeah. If he's your number four option, that's fantastic. If he's your number one option, you are in trouble.
Exactly. So if your number four option is gone, what you know, you can go without him.
Yeah. For failed at failing, which is where we were at, I got to say the Philadelphia 76ers. Now, yours is more on the positive side of, like, you failed at failing by trying to tank and then becoming good in doing so. The Sixers have tried to tank and they've done even worse in doing so. You know, and now this is being sort of eclipsed by the news that Jerry Colangelo has come over as a team president, which sort of numbers the days left for Sam Hinkie at Philadelphia. So do you think this is it for Hinkie?
Well, Colangelo and D'Antoni, and it's just funny, like, you look at the message boards and
Mike D'Antoni, you're saying, is going to be, there's rumors that he's going to be an associate head coach.
Yeah, which, okay, you're the associate head coach, well, how many times, you know, how long till? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, we you know, we signed our current guy for 2 years, but, well, have you developed, you know, Nerlens has seemed to have regressed this year. Mm-hmm. It could just be Okafor, the fact they can't play together, but.
Well, he can't score. I mean, and we're in a league where you got to score points even in the paint. So I think that's a big part of it, too, with Noel.
And he hasn't developed anybody.
Yeah.
So it
so you're sort of questioning why he got the extension?
Well, he got the extension because, well, we put him in this place with no chance to succeed, so.
Let's give him a chance.
We have to, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not his fault. We can't fire him saying he's not doing anything, but because, well, you've given him a team and then you traded half their team away by December. Then you sign somebody, and then, okay, where he might fit, and then you cut him.
Yeah. The thing is, how quick can the returns be? Like, the idea of having Jerry Colangelo is that if you want to bring over free agents with all the mountains of cap room that they do have, that you can bring in a guy like Colangelo, who's been the chairman of team, you know, USA Basketball. You know, he was a big executive with the Phoenix Suns. I think he won Executive of the Year 4 times. Very, very well respected. He's a guy that can go into a room with a free agent and say, do you want to come play with us? And he will listen. Whereas with Sam,
here's, yes, come with us. Here's what I've done. Here is our vision. As opposed to, you want money? No, we're not going to give it to you.
I don't know if Sam Hinkie's ever even talked to a free agent. I think he just finds the waiver wire and just checklists them.
And it's funny, like, you go to, like, the message boards, like, well, you know, the NBA is trying to mess with our process, and they don't want us to get all our number one picks, and the NBA would like nothing more to have a super dominant team that would dominate the headlines, where everywhere they go, it would have this rock star mentality, and everything is sold out. They want nothing more to have that traveling, you know, Lakers, where that was the talk of the town. They come in, oh, the Lakers are here, you have all this. The league would like nothing more than that. The fact that you're putting nothing in and you have to sell, you know, giving away tickets.
No one, even for an easy win, no one's going to go to a game, even when the Philadelphia 76ers are the road team, and say, oh, yeah, I got to watch this really terrible team. I think people will pay a ticket to go see LeBron James and Steph Curry kill their team.
You want to see the best of the best. You don't want to see
the worst of the worst.
Yeah, who are these guys coming in? Like, yeah, I saw the 76ers because I had to.
Yeah.
And they were going to be on the, they were on every package again because, well, oh, people are going against, well, yeah, I'm, in order to get the, you know, they put one or two good games on there, but, oh, in order to get the, in order to see James Harden, in order to see Steph Curry, yeah, I got to go to this game that nobody wants to go to.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest misconceptions about professional sports today in this era is the idea that there are lovable losers. There are no more lovable losers, especially in the NBA, where the idea is to win now and to win as soon as possible. So the idea that these teams can just trot out one shitty season after another and people will just kind of laugh it off and say, huh, that's our team, that's not the way it is anymore. That may have been the case in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, and maybe even with the Chicago Cubs, who have suddenly become good again. But no one really wants to see a terrible, terrible team every year in the NBA anymore. It's just not, it's not marketed that way. You always have bad teams in the NBA. You're always going to have 3 or 4 teams that win 20, like, less than 30 games every season. That's just the way the math works. But it doesn't mean that you necessarily are, you know, it's appealing to watch the same team suffer those seasons year after year after year.
Well, nobody wants to see lovable losers because that would mean some sort of tragedy would have happened where, okay, it's Hurricane Katrina. The Saints are terrible. They have no home games. Oh, okay, let's good for them. Flip Saunders died. Timberwolves, they're doing good because their coach just died out of nowhere.
Yeah.
That means something bad happened. Nobody just wants to see a bad team that has no...
That gets short-shrifted by their management.
That's just like, you know, when you're seeing nowadays with the college non-conference play, you're seeing, well, oh, look, Maryland destroyed Maryland Eastern Shore.
Yeah.
PC beat Bryant. These aren't games you want to see. And
no. They're only appealing for those college fan bases, you know, we're not going to get too off topic, because they like easy wins. They don't want the hard. In their heart of hearts, they don't want the tough teams all the time. They don't want those schools that are going to give them a challenge because it makes them too nervous.
Well, here's the thing. Like, just going back to college for one last time. Everybody wants to see Duke good and have that evil... You know, oh, they're so evil.
Oh, that's the one thing I will say. Fans love the evil empire. They like the Heatles. They like the Golden State Warriors.
The Golden State Warriors are still lovable, but once they start winning two, three titles, and that's all ESPN talks about, it's like, okay, now we're getting sick of them.
Are we at the sick of yet step yet with the Warriors, or are they still?
No, because the fact that Curry is having the greatest season of all time right now.
Yeah. That's why I give more credit to the Heat in 2013. And by the way, I think adding those four wins from last season to make it 28 wins is not fair. I think that that's a 24-game winning streak, and it falls three short of the Heat's in 2013. I'll say this about the Heat. They had the 27-game winning streak. They did most of those after the All-Star break, when everyone's playing their best basketball because they're securing a playoff spot. Do you realize how hard that is? That's incredibly hard. I think we talked about this the previous episode. But not only that, that was the Heat at their highest heel point. Like, everyone hated the Heat. And the fact that they had this crazy winning streak made them hate them even more. And it didn't matter because they were winning all the games. I think there was more effort put into that than what the Warriors did. That's just my two cents.
Well, here's the difference between two really bad teams. Mm-hmm. The Lakers are just sad because most teams want to hate the Lakers. They want that thrilling, well, we've got to beat them, and hey, we destroyed them, but they deserve to go down, and it was a fight and a challenge, as opposed to the Brooklyn, you know, New Jersey Nets, who have no history and nobody cares about, and it's just like, well, they're bad. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah, but the Sixers have history. That's what
makes
them
really bad.
Nobody
remembers history. The furthest people, the average kid remembers is Iverson, and that's it. That's only history the team has.
I mean, but we've had this offseason where Daryl Dawkins passes away, Moses Malone passes away. And I think they even did a ceremony for Moses Malone the day that they beat the Lakers to win their first game and their only game so far. So, you know, I guess that was kind of a rallying cry for them a little bit. But, you know, you have sort of these harken backs for the Sixers, and then they just... follow it up with another shit season. I mean, that had to be part of the reason why Colangelo was brought in.
Kids these days know nothing of a pre-Kobe world. Mm-hmm. They know nothing of they don't remember Shaq's first few seasons in Orlando. He was already a star in L.A. when they started watching. The Jordan era was just off clips, you know, referencing these current superstars. Your history point sort of falls flat because, yeah, you could find history in every team, but past Iverson, before Iverson, they were terrible, but then, too, in the 90s.
Colangelo's hire, does it make the outlook any slightly rosier? I mean, I know it's the color of dark, like, day-old crap, but do you see that little that little hint of pink somewhere in that big turd?
There's no hope in the future because even if they get Ben Simmons, they get the top two picks.
They got a mountain of draft picks for the next two seasons.
LeBron didn't make them. They didn't make the playoffs his first season, and he had the greatest rookie season, I think, to date. That's that point.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's top five player. He'll be in there, top 10 all time. Couldn't make the playoffs with him. There's no rookie who,
you know, Amari Stoudemire willed the Suns to it, but they already had pieces in place. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get better. You're not going to go from last place to first place, which I think...
Yeah, and the other thing with Simmons is that I think it's starting to become more obvious, you know, since after we did the college thing, that it's number one and then it's decent, you know, but number one is where you want to be for the draft this year. You need that number one pick.
Yeah.
So, let's move on to another one, and it's sort of similar, and you mentioned it. We were talking about the difference between, you know, failing at being a failure, you know, in two different ways, and then setting yourself up for failure by doing better and making giving fans a little bit more hope. I got to say it's Boston, you know, because I'm not trying to say that in a mean way. I'm saying that Brad Stevens has done such a great job with that Celtics team, and their makeup has shown so much depth that they're becoming the new Tom Thibodeau Bulls. But the difference is they don't have superstars. You know, I think they're in a position where the best that they will ever do is being a second-round playoff exit. Are you setting yourself up for failure by doing so?
Not really, because you're setting yourself up, but you know you don't have those pieces to take on.
But will Celtics fans be happy with that?
With a second-round exit? Yes, because... in their minds, next year will be the year they sign their superstar, and next year, you know, they're going to use these picks and they're going to start doing something with it, because they know Amir and David Lee is not the answer, but you can see the results they're getting from Amir Johnson, who's been great. You still see they're horribly out-rebounded, and,
yeah.
You know, watching the Warriors game, You're putting Olynyk and four shooting guards out there. No wonder you're out getting out rebounded the whole game.
Do you have one?
For teams that are setting themselves up for failure?
Yeah, at least at the end of this season.
You might not like this, but I might have to say Oklahoma City.
Oh, okay, explain.
They have all their pieces back, and they're still sort of misfiring here or there. Mm-hmm. They haven't looked like they could knock off the either the Spurs or the Warriors.
Yeah, they right now, 15-8 right now. Yeah.
They look like they're with the Clippers of, we're just sort of muddling around, and, you know, as great as Enes Kanter has been, he's $70 million. You're playing him 20 minutes.
Did he steal Steven Adams' mustache? So weird. I don't remember the name of the character, but there's a character on the show, Workaholics. And every time I see Enes Kanter, he reminds me of that guy with the glasses and the big, thick mustache.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's just a random thought about the Thunder, because I don't have anything else to speak about them. Because they haven't really changed anything. They're the same team.
They have a new coach. They were supposed to have a new style. So yeah. Should we blame Billy Donovan for not doing anything?
I think Billy is just trying to stay out of the way. I think he's just pulling a Doug Collins. He's trying not to be too intrusive.
He's put him on autopilot, and the autopilot is sort of sputtering?
A little bit, but the thing is, if your autopilot is two of the 10 best players in the NBA, that's not bad. But how long can you rely on them? We've talked about the Thunder over and over and over again with how their supporting cast is not in a position to really pick them up in the event of an injury. And it sort of showed when Durant was hurt that, you know, even though Westbrook piles on ridiculous numbers every night, including assists where he's really excelled this year, they're not in a position where they're going to win all the games. You know, and it's a tough road to climb when you're two best players are your only options. That's what makes Golden State so great. Steph Curry has been amazing, but he could probably have a mediocre game and they could still win.
Well, which is what happened in Boston. Draymond Green is the one who really stepped up. And
I totally forgot to mention, he did the what they call the 5-by-5, which is where you get at least five rebounds, steals, assists, rebounds, and points, which is... doesn't happen often, and he was the first one to do 20-10 and do a 5-by-5 since Hakeem Olajuwon in 1993.
Yeah, this, you know, the one thing about him is if he has any sort of leg injury, he's pretty much done as a player.
Yeah.
If he loses that one step he has, mm-hmm. and he just becomes average speed.
Somebody made, they tried to make a comparison to Dennis Rodman, like, because they were talking about Rodman, and they said, well, who's a good modern comparison? And they said Draymond Green. I kind of thought about it. I said, you know, that's really not the worst comparison. He kind of reminds me of...
But Rodman couldn't shoot.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's not the most direct comparison, but he's a guy that overachieves. He plays taller than he is. But Green's such a... He's a better three-point shooter. He's a better all-around scorer. Not as good of a rebounder as Rodman. Defensively, Rodman's one of the 10 best defensive players of all time. So I don't want to go...
Yeah, that's why it's... You know, I'm standing by my... He's just a bigger Kirilenko.
Mm-hmm.
Because Kirilenko had that deceptive speed. He had the shots. He would. He had the quick hands.
Playmaking ability.
Yes.
Yes.
And Draymond has, you know, okay, that's a cheap comparison because that's really the last 5x5er.
The one thing Kirilenko wasn't, that I remember, he wasn't really a stat stuffer in Utah. He wasn't a guy that, he would get decent steal and blocks numbers, but he wouldn't get like, he wouldn't average, you know, 18 or 19 points and 7 or 8 rebounds like Draymond Green does.
He wouldn't average it, but he would fill all the columns.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could even say he's like a big version of Tony Allen in his prime.
Let's talk, because we were talking about teams that, you know, we were talking about the Thunder and how they haven't really adapted at all. Let's talk about teams that have failed to adapt to, you know, any... They failed to adapt to the NBA style or the NBA culture, and they've struggled by doing so, or failed to adapt to a new coach, which is sort of what the Thunder have started to do under Donovan. I've got to say the Chicago Bulls under Fred Hoiberg, the other college-to-pro hire that came from the coaching ranks in the NBA this season. They're the same Bulls team, and I don't understand. They shoot more threes, they try to play faster, but it feels like the Bulls are fighting it off. Like, the players are still saying, no, we want to play the way we did under Tibbs. You know, and it's just a really weird fit. I don't really like the makeup of that Bulls team. They're a playoff team for sure, but I just don't like the way that they play. It feels like oil and water.
A lot of rumblings out there, from out there.
Yeah.
You know, rumblings that Gasol's not going to go back there next year, and Noah is not...
And the Rose stuff that we heard last month with trades and stuff.
Exactly, Derek Rose, and the only really, you know, shining story is McDermott has done something. And
Butler being a perennial all-star now.
Well, Butler is sort of the player he was last year, and he hasn't taken a minute, but he hasn't had to because Derek Rose isn't the player he used to be, so...
Yeah. Do you have a different team that's failed to adapt? The Grizzlies are kind of like the perennial pick here, but do you have anybody else?
The Grizzlies are the easiest pick in failure to adapt.
Uh-huh.
And this might come to sort of as a surprise to you.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to go with the Atlanta Hawks.
Now, do you mean that they failed to adapt to the Eastern Conference improving?
Yes. They've made, every year, they dump players for... You know, they gave away Lou Williams 2 years ago, and this year they gave away, they let Damari Carroll go, and they replaced him with...
Kent Bazemore. Yeah.
Well, Kent Bazemore was there, but...
Yeah, but he's taken his spot, pretty much.
Yeah, and then he's taken his spot, but...
They brought in Tiago Splitter as a center.
Yeah, and you who didn't really do anything there, and you've sort of just kept the same team, and everybody else is improving, you're not adapting to the adapting climate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you revolutionized this three-point thing. It's like when the Dolphins were the first one to get the Wildcat.
Yeah.
And they were just scoring on everybody, then everybody had a Wildcat, and the Dolphins were like, well, we're still going to run it.
Yeah.
And they, you know, then they
and now you're like the third or fourth best Wildcat team in the league.
And then, you know, everybody did it and then gave it up. And they're like, no, we're still going to do it. It's like, well, we know how to stop it. And
yeah.
we figured out, you know, Atlanta going from their crazy win streak last year to just being 14-11 right now.
Yeah. That's the difference in the NBA. It's often imitated, often duplicated. Like, there's a way... Just because you weren't the first one to do it doesn't mean you're not going to be the best at it. You know?
And then people forget. You bring back the same team every year. You're getting older. I was shocked to see that Mike Conley's already 28.
Mm-hmm.
And Tony Allen's 34?
Tony Allen is on the verge of being washed up. I was watching him in a game against the Spurs, and he looked so bad. Now, this is, like we always say, it's December basketball, but he just does not have his legs anymore. He's no longer first-team all-defense. I hate to mention that to him, but it's true. And he just seems like just another player to me. And he was such an X-factor for them every year, and maybe he pulls out something great in the postseason, and he's just saving his legs. But, man, Tony Allen just doesn't look the same anymore.
That's the thing. You have one last run with like Pierce. You know, okay, I'm saving myself for the playoffs, and then playoff time he starts. But like I said, he's 34. Like, of course, his body's time to go.
Yeah.
From being that great, and like I said, with Draymond Green, he slows down a bit. Tony Allen is his future. You're just going to be an average guy.
Mm-hmm.
There's the steep decline for that, and the failure to adapt is, no, we're going to have our team, we're going to have our team, we're going to have our team. Well, now your team is 5 years down the line, your team's 5 years older. You know, like we said, Noah isn't the same defensive player that he was.
No, that's another one who we had heard rumors about with him being a sixth man, and then there was that, you know, the kerfuffle about who said that they were going to be, he was going to be on the bench, and Noah said he was going to do it, and Hoiberg said that it was pitched to him by Noah, and a lot of hurt feelings in Chicago for some weird reason.
Yeah, it's one of those, you don't, that's not the town you're going to play the he said, she said game.
Mm-hmm.
Just get on the same page. Oh, yeah, we agreed to it.
The beat writers in Chicago are a little bit ruthless. You know, the Sam Smiths of the world.
They smell the blood in the water immediately. You just can't go, it was a team consensus. We all came to the idea we're a team. I'm doing this
well,
a team.
And also, the media members are so much older, and they're all kind of cushy with John Paxson and Jerry Reinsdorf and Gar Foreman. I'm pretty sure that there's going to be some leaks, and that's what I think that's what a lot of this is. Some of it might be false, but I think there's a lot of smoke to that fire. Let's kind of flip it over. A team that's failed by trying to change.
A team that's failed by trying to change.
Mine is the Washington Wizards. And for some weird reason this year, they decided they wanted to push the tempo, play faster, and take more threes. And that is such a slap in the face of what they were successful at for the past two seasons. And I don't understand whose idea it was, whether it was the GM or Randy Whitman. But even though Bradley Beal's numbers have sort of expanded because of it, you know, going into a contract year, I just don't understand it. And the Wizards have struggled basically because of it. They need to go back to slowing it down.
Well, they did the next man up. They could do it. You know, we rented Paul Pierce. He unfortunately left us. Otto Porter is just as good. Here's Kelly Oubre Jr., who's not a clone of Otto Porter in uselessness.
And then bringing in Gary Neal for shooting, and they're relying on him way too much. I saw him clank a potential game-tying shot against the Pelicans in a game that went into the hundreds again. I just don't understand this with the Wizards. They are not built to be an offensive up-and-down team.
That's the thing, is if you're relying on your ninth man, you have serious troubles.
Mm-hmm.
As for me, I had to think about this one yet again for a little bit. I think I might go with your Pelicans on this one.
Okay.
Saying the coach is the problem, let's bring in this new coach, this new total system, everybody gets injured and you're back to the same old Pelicans.
Mm.
You tried to change, you couldn't even change correctly.
Yeah. Now, the thing is, Anthony Davis is such a unique talent that I guess the idea was, we can turn this into an up and down offense, and he'll just run to it like a gazelle, you know. But and maybe he is capable of doing that. He struggled to start, but then he started picking up some big numbers at the, you know, after like 2 weeks for Anthony Davis. But he did struggle to start, and I think that was a reason why, because maybe that style of play is not fit for the nucleus of that team.
And speaking of that, not fit for the nucleus, I'd have to also put the Bucks in that category. Is you're so
I don't know what the Bucks are. I just watched them beat the Warriors. I still don't know what they are.
You get Monroe, and you we need to ditch Ilyasova, and you sort of see that he might have been the key piece everything.
You know, the other one I heard about is that losing Zaza Pachulia to the Mavericks was a big loss for them, because it gave them a big man in the middle, a true center that they could rely on instead of having to rotate guys.
And that's the thing, is you had a pick and roll with Ilyasova, and, you know, or even pick and pop with him, and it's just now you're, well, we could play Giannis at the four, or we could go super small and play Chris Middleton there.
And you can see the difference between having a full season of Michael Carter-Williams and having half of a season of Brandon Knight and having half a season of Michael Carter-Williams.
Yeah, and it's, well, we have these new players, we've upgraded the talent, but if the talent doesn't fit and you don't put other pieces around to compensate for that, it's just, you know, okay, you paid Chris Middleton. He's still putting up the numbers, but he doesn't look like he's fitting as well as he did last year.
Yeah, he's sort of invisible. He's not hitting the game-winning shots, you know, while they were on there, you know, while they were improving and winning games when people weren't expecting them to. You know, and that may have been in that other category we talked about, setting themselves up for failure in a ways. And then we'll finish this up. A team that's just an organization, a team that has failed its players as a whole. I think we're both in agreement. It's got to be the Lakers. LA Lakers have just, they have done their play, and I'm not saying their players are great players that could do so much better if they would just unleash them, but man, they have done them a disservice by sitting them in the fourth quarter of games for young talents, making Swaggy P take crappy shots, giving Kobe Bryant 30 to 27 minutes of gameplay when he probably isn't even capable of being a decent NBA player at this point. It doesn't make any sense to me. And some people think that it's just a really secretly good job of Byron Scott tanking the season so that they can keep their top three pick, but I'm not buying it. I just think that they've just done their players a really bad disservice.
There's a difference between, like, let's look at last year with Minnesota. That was a supreme tank job because you're playing Adrian Payne and Zach LaVine.
Yeah, but they did it in March and April when there was nothing left to play for. They said, forget it.
You know, you're playing Anthony Bennett minutes to you know, and you're playing all these other guys. Well, yeah, they need the court time. They need to develop. Well, we know we're not going to win. Okay, we get it. You don't go out and put Ron Artest and Swaggy P on the court who are going to provide nothing and have no upside. If your team is going to be bad, you do what Denver did. Okay, Moody, it's yours. We know you're going to suck this year. Go have your 10 turnovers a game. Mm-hmm. Learn what not to do.
That's what Saunders did in Washington when John Wall got there. He said, I know John Wall's going to struggle as a rookie, but he's our point guard.
You know, you have a high basketball IQ. You will learn not to make mistakes. You will figure it out. You're good.
Do you think that the fact that Kobe Bryant was like the next great guard after Michael is sort of coming back to haunt them because we're in such a guard-centric league now? That now that you're trying to let Kobe have his swan song, that you're giving him minutes that really belong to somebody else and would be more beneficial to them?
No, because you could put Kobe on there with anybody. He'll still take his shots.
But he's not
going
to pass the ball.
He still won't pass, but you're going to... Any court time is better than sitting on the bench. You're not going to learn anything by sitting there waving a towel, joking with your friends on the end of the bench.
And the one thing I'll say about Julius Randle, he's looked really good as a rebounder lately. He's been perking up as a rebounder. As a scorer, I think he tops out at, like, I can't even say Greg Monroe, probably less than Greg Monroe. Like, I think he's maybe a 15-point-per-game scorer, but as a rebounder, I think he's a double-digit rebounder in the future. But D'Angelo Russell has played a little better. He played really well against Minnesota in a game that they lost in overtime in Minnesota. But, man, I just don't... You know, I think this all just goes back to the Kobe getting a lot of minutes thing that a lot of people have a problem with.
Well, there are four other positions on the court, and as we've seen with Milwaukee, you can put out really four point guards.
And one of them is Roy Hibbert, who has an expiring deal and has no motivation to play well.
He has no motivation. Yeah, he's just taking the Chris Kaman.
Yeah.
I'm just phoning it in.
Yes.
But the point of bad teams is develop your stars. You don't sit them to teach them lessons. What lessons are you teaching them by not being able to learn from your mistakes? You don't see Byron Scott, you know, hey, come sit next to me. Come to the end of it. Nope, you have your five assistant coaches, then your rotation, then they're at the end. If you're not playing, you're not teaching somebody, you're not going to learn anything.
Did you have a different answer for a team that's failed its players? You were thinking about staying in Los Angeles for this.
Okay, I will go with the... I will say the Clippers has sort of failed its players.
And now this isn't a large scale. This is like this is kind of close to an epic fail.
It's borderline that, because there's something horribly, horribly wrong that's going on with that team that we can't figure out, because...
Do you think it's internal, or do you think it's more... Or do you think it's more something that had already been set up before the season began?
It was already set up as a circus with the whole DeAndre Jordan thing, but then you get, you know, Lance Stephenson, you get Paul Pierce, and then you're, in the end, you're playing Mbah Moute at the three.
Supposedly, Stephenson, when he's on the court with the starters, they're one of the most offensively efficient teams in the league. But he doesn't play him because he was late for a meeting or a shoot-around, and Doc Rivers punished him.
Yeah, and like I said, that there's something that Doc Rivers, the GM, is letting down Doc Rivers, the coach, by sort of, you know, having to put together this mishmash bench, and you got what you got, and now the coach is...
A lot of self-punishment going on here.
He seems to have overworked himself. Mm-hmm.
I don't think Doc Rivers was ever really fit to be a GM, to be honest. You know, I think... And I think we're kind of seeing that with Mike Budenholzer in Atlanta. Oh, you did a great job coaching this team. Okay, now that Danny Ferry has kind of talked his way out of here, let's give you the job. Well, it doesn't always work that way. There's a reason you're a coach. You know, it's like the old phrase with Bill Parcells, if you can let me cook the meals, at least let me shop for the groceries. Well, you know, sometimes you don't shop for the best grocery. See, you know what I'm saying?
You might not have the best, you know, clue of what brand is the best.
Well, I do. I'm a good shopper.
You're busy cooking the whole time. You're not doing scouting on every other team. You're only seeing these people primarily play. Where's your time to break down tape as a scout, a scouter?
Yeah. Who's the cooker at the house? Is it you or is it the wife?
We are on separate times, so nobody cooks for anybody. I can cook and have cooked well. It's just my cooking is rather infrequent.
I can't lie. I can't cook for the life of me. If I was alone, I'd probably starve to death.
There's always microwavable mac and cheese to save you, right?
A popcorn and, you know, maybe... I mean, I'll just probably... I'm like, I would be a takeout god. I would sit there and I would just destroy my budget with takeout. Which is kind of like the culture of the world itself, you know. Everybody wants to just go get something that's already pre-made. Unless you want to go to Chipotle's and get E. coli. Have you been able to avoid any of that up there?
I haven't eaten Chipotle. I don't think I've ever had Chipotle.
I just saw one in Metairie, which is a suburb of New Orleans that you know about. And I was passing it on Veterans in Veterans Boulevard, and there they were eating at Chipotle's. Even though
it's like, why are you acting shocked? Well, this is totally better than Taco Bell. Taco Bell, man, I said, no, there's no way Chipotle, which is the same thing, just bigger. Yeah, you know, like, wow, what do you mean we got sick? What do you mean the food's undercooked? No way. Like,
so you're saying the Clippers are the Chipotle of the NBA? They've offered their fans something that's going to poison them later.
Well, right now that's. I would say it's sort of more the Wizards right now of just the, what do you mean they're terrible and they've done nothing to fix it.
But yeah, I think that's going to be wrapping this up. The only one I'll say is that my failure as a player, we could probably do this ad nauseum for another show, but my failure as a player to tee off, man, Ty Lawson, what a horrible year this man has had. A horrible year just in general, you know, just in life, you know, with the between the DUIs and just not fitting in Denver, you know, and then going to Houston where he had a great opportunity and he just blew it there. I mean, I don't think he can fix it in Houston anyway. That's got to be my failure this season as a player, just a player.
Players are for another day. We will get to that. But
oh, you got a lot of ammunition there, huh?
Yeah, we have a couple of good games coming up this week.
Just a few. I mean, the thing is, I don't really expect. Do you see any on the schedule that you like?
We got Raptors and Pacers on Monday.
Okay.
That's an exciting one. I think that might be.
Yeah, Paul George. They did lose to the Warriors, but Paul George ain't slowing down. That's for sure. Let me see here. On
Wednesday, you have sort of a curious disappointment in the Grizzlies and Bulls, mm-hmm. where. You know, that used to be a marquee matchup. Now there's sort of what's wrong with these guys.
Yeah, the Thunder, play the Cavaliers on Thursday night on TNT. I want to see that. That's kind of interesting. The Clippers go to San Antonio. That'll be sort of a rekindling of the series that they had in the playoffs. That'll be on ESPN on Friday. And then the Warriors get back at the Bucks, so we'll see. But that's going to be at Oracle, so I got to think that they're going to hang 30. It's like beat them by 30.
Well, they'll be refreshed finally, so they should easily win by 30. And that's pretty much it we have for the week. There's not many.
Yeah.
Clippers and Spurs Friday, maybe.
It feels like the schedule is setting itself up for the Christmas week and then for the New Year's when there's like a ton of really good games.
You know, there's a game or two to watch. It's not just all miscellaneous mediocrity as it is most weeks.
Yeah, and you could kind of feel it picking up, you know, where with the intensity, with the, you know, no one's looking at the playoffs yet, but people are looking at the season saying, okay, we need to start picking up some steam here. So, you know, it's definitely starting to show. But on behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Go enjoy The Force Awakens.